Rush nerds unite. It's the Ludini Rock and Rush podcast.
We have assumed control. We have assumed control.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Ludini Rock and Rush podcast. Hey, we're still I'm still the same Ludini. We're still going to have a great goddamn time.
Sure, sure.
But tonight, we're going to be focusing on the music of Rush. We do this every so often.
You know why?
Usually when Lily's not here.
I was going to say, that's
it's like when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah. Lily's not here, so it's a little less sexier. Just not by much, because you still have Ludini.
But a lot more Rush nerdier.
Yeah, boy.
You can find out more about everything we do at LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Including our live events, which we are doing right now.
Right now.
So we are we're still figuring out this live thing.
Yeah.
Because people say modern that technology. Like they're trying to leave comments and they can't see the comments and blah 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 blah. But if you go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, you will get all the information on everything we have going on, including our live events, which we are doing one as we speak. They're live. You're virtually live. They're live on Facebook and on the Rock Rage Radio live page. Listen,
yes,
rockrageradio.com. Go down. That's the other link you want to check out. And you want to download the free app where you can hear great music programming 24/7. It's a very, very cool program that they have going on over there. There's a lot of great jocks spinning great records, as well as great music talk. Things like Hot Licks with Lily 6. Thank you, Mr. Pittsburgh.
I have to do
so,
that.
So, Mr. Pittsburgh and I want to tell you to make sure you check out Rock Rage Radio.
Yes. Did we mention the cost, though?
Well, I don't know. That's the problem with Rock Rage Radio.
Yeah.
See, I'm a little nervous about recommending it because of the price. Why don't you tell them about the price, Mr. Pittsburgh?
Last time I checked my credit card statement, it was free. Absolutely free.
What?
Can you believe that?
That's crazy talk.
That's cray cray.
That's crazy. Yes. You crazy, Mr. Pittsburgh. You crazy, man.
I know.
So, we were able to leave a comment. It looks like the comments are working.
Okay,
so
good.
This must be the way we're going to have to do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Without getting into
the technicalities, we had to change things around.
Wire A didn't go into socket B.
Something
it's
like
weird.
That. It's something as gay as that.
Hey.
By the way, gay. I just want to say real quick, I'm going to refer to the word gay later on. I just want to say that like we're not talking gay.
No,
like gay.
Not our homosexual friends.
No. We just mean like you know that you're like
cast members.
It's like you know
co-workers.
You know what I mean. Gay is like you know. Great homosexual people who are not. They don't have to be gay. In quotes here.
Okay. Yeah.
So we do have somebody watching.
Yeah.
Just as I said, gay.
Neela.
That's great. What's that? Neela Owen is here. Anyways, so let's get into some Rush.
Okay.
We're not going to do a lot of playing around. We'll get into some of what we did during the week and everything on the backside here. We mix these up, do them a little bit different, just to give you guys a little variety. So let's talk about... So Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson both released solo albums.
Correct, as usual, King Friday.
I believe Alex Lifeson's album was released in 1995.
Close enough for
I believe I saw the recorded date. It's like December 4th. So
okay.
Since 1996.
Yeah.
Okay. And Getty's was released in 2000.
Correct, as usual, okay. King Friday.
I need you to talk. Because it is a podcast. It's audio.
Well, I know that, but I'm also trying to connect with our listeners.
Okay.
You see.
So you...
Neela Owens says hi. Hi there. Yes, okay. Yes, yes.
Okay, so we have Neela. Thank you. Thank you, Neela. We do appreciate that. Rock and roll.
Let's send her out
Rush
kisses.
And roll, rock and rush. So these two records came out. Now,
yes.
I want to discuss, before we play anything and do any of this stuff. And,
sure.
There isn't a lot. There isn't a lot of information.
No, there isn't.
About these records, okay? And just like the Rush guys, they are kind of low-key guys. They're not like, you know, while they're big rock stars, they don't live the big rock star lives.
Exactly.
Where they're, you know what I mean? Everything they do is in the tabloids and everything. So basically, if you look up these albums, you get when they're released, who played on them.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah.
There's a little bit more on Getty's page than there's almost nothing on Alex's. I believe we'll go ahead and just give us the stats for the second a second here, so that you do know the stats.
Sure,
Getty's really reached 52 on the Billboard 200.
All right, then.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
I was like way high. That it even was on there, I thought is like really cool. Because, I mean, again, like these are, they're rock stars, but they're not, you know, Van Halen.
Uh-huh.
Alex's album released in, this is released in January 1996 on Anthem Records. Recorded by Lurkst Sound.
Oh, I wonder where that comes from.
Reached 99 on the 200 in 96 and received a Juno Award nomination for Best New Group in 1997. So it does have a couple of, they both have a couple of accolades.
Oh,
accolades.
They got you in them big foreign language words again. Accolades.
Geddes has a, Geddy uses Matt Cameron on drums for pretty much every song.
Mm-hmm.
Guys don't know who Matt Cameron is. He's the drummer for Soundgarden.
Correct.
Okay. And I think it was a stupendous, fantastic choice. Alex kind of mixes things up a little wee bit. There's a little bit of a... There's a Blake Manning who does play drums. And I did search Blake Manning, drummer. And he is a session musician who's played with tons of Canadian artists.
Uh-huh.
Backed a lot of people up on tour, etc. Okay. So you've got Matt Cameron and Blake Manning doing drumming. Oops, that's the wrong button. I want...
Don't touch that button.
Okay. A guy named Ben Mink plays guitars and violins and does strings and stuff and did some producing and engineering on Geddes' album, who I think this gentleman added a lot. He is a well-established session and a sideman in the Canadian music scene.
Okay.
Okay.
Ben, yes.
Yeah. Alex worked with Peter Cardinale on bass. Don't know much about him. But he did use Les Claypool on one song.
Okay.
And Adrian, you going to say that word if you want.
Oh, that's his real... That's
their real name. Is that his kid?
I believe it is.
Ziva Janovich. Did I get that right?
Ziva Janovich. I believe you're right.
That
is Alex Lyson's real last name.
Yeah, that's the real
last
name.
Don't make us say it again. You should have been paying attention.
I can't. There's no way that's coming out twice.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens on Sunday mornings. I'm like, there's no way that's coming out twice.
And guess what?
Thanks, I'll be here all week.
Hey. Ho. Right you are, sir.
And then there's some auxiliary. So, also... If you haven't figured out, Geddy Lee, since he's the singer, that sings on all the songs, on Alex's record, it's a bit more diverse. He works with a female vocalist, Del Bello, on one track, and then an artist who calls himself Edwin.
Oh.
Sings on several more, and Alex himself does some like spoken word things in a couple places.
Yes, yes, he did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, now, with that said...
Yes.
Why don't you discuss for just in your personal experience,
yes,
you know, you're hearing these two records and what you thought.
Okay. So
start wherever you want. Start with Geddes.
I'm going to kind of give you an analogy here. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? It's fantastic. I'm a cook and sometimes I just come home and make that for dinner. But if you have the peanut butter by itself, okay, it's pretty good. You have the jelly by itself. Yeah, that's pretty good. And bread can be good too. But you put them all together.
What's that spell?
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So that's the way Rush is. Now, in these two albums, we're taking just the bread or just the peanut butter. Not as good as a sandwich. Still good. Just the jelly. And that's kind of how I felt about Alex's album. You know, people are like, oh, I can hear Alex Lifeson's influence. Well, yeah, the whole album is his influence, right? So you're taking, and basically, the way, as I listened to this album, what I thought was, you just took the guitar out of Rush and put it over here by itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you feel that way?
I want you to say your thing. I'm going to say my thing.
Okay. And that's how, and it had moments where I'm like, oh, I like that. And I love Alex's sense of humor, you know, just shut up, you know.
Right.
That was good. And, but it's like, it's, and I'll talk about this when we talk about the next album, but it's like, it's his guitar, but I think his guitar is like should be with the other guys. You know, you work with guys so much, and then you try to bring in other people, and it's just not the same. You're still the same guitarist, and I can still hear the same licks and the same influences, but I don't know.
Okay.
All right.
All right. And yeah. And just so did you? What I'm trying to get your. Well, I guess that's the wrong question. Well, I wanted to know your personal experience when you heard the record,
I kind of felt that when I first heard it.
But did you like buy it when it first came out?
No.
I bought it like maybe within a few weeks of it coming out.
Really?
I read in Guitar Player magazine that he was putting out a solo album. And I'm like,
I gotta get that.
Alex Lifeson is one of my fucking heroes. I've got to get his solo album.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when I got it. It wasn't like right when it came out.
It was in 1996. I can tell you that. I got it in 1996.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing. Back in 1996, you didn't have the internet, so you didn't know that like all these things were coming out. You just had to find them.
I literally was in Guitar Player magazine.
Yeah,
he was being interviewed and he was talking about it, and they were talking about the different tracks. I'm like, I got to get this record.
Yes.
I got to get it. What about your experience with Getty's album?
So Getty's album, I liked a little more. I'm sure we'll talk about this, but his first track comes right in with the bass, and it's Geddy Lee. You're like, yeah. And I don't know if it's because I'm so used to Rush, and I love Rush, and they love me back. But
they do love you back.
I knew it. Thanks, Lee.
They do love you back. They told me. They do. That we were talking on the phone before you got here. Make sure Mr. Pittsburgh knows that we love him. You know, we appreciate all the years of his support. You know,
but now I forget where I was going there. Getty's album. Getty's album. So, I don't know if it's because it's Getty's vocals and everything, and there are some real hints of the style he has with Rush. But I thought there were some kind of cool songs too that were just him. You know, they weren't what I would consider Rush-esque. But anyway, I actually liked My Favorite Headache better than Victor, which is weird because I like Alex more than I like. No, I'm just kidding. I love
after
Neo.
How they said so many nice things about you.
I know.
Shame on you,
I don't want to start a fight in the band.
So here's my experience. I went out and bought Victor like the day it came, not the day it came out, but I bought it. And this is kind of telling. I bought it in 1996 and I bought it in a used bin somewhere. Okay. So I remember getting it and being very excited about it. And I liked it because I liked Alex Lifeson.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very kind of like, okay, it's more experimental. You know, he's doing stuff with like,
right.
You know, in odd time signatures, mm-hmm. with kind of very sometimes like monotone kind of melodies and, you know, different chord progressions that you wouldn't really associate. There's a song and I cannot remember off the top of my head. And I was listening to it today that is Four Sticks by Led Zeppelin. Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Bum, bum.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember
which
track it is on here. We'll get to it.
Yep.
I remember like it's cool. But I remember I would zone out on a lot of the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that my favorite one on the record is the novelty track.
Right. Right.
Shut Up, Shutting Up is. You know, I don't know why. I think, too, it says a lot about his sense of humor.
Exactly.
He always came across as, like, the guy in the band who was the jokester. You
exactly.
Know, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then when you see the movie, Beyond, what's it called? Beyond the Lighted Stage?
Lighted Stage, yeah. You definitely see.
He's really the guy who's the wisecracker.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was okay. But I had to at some point kind of say I don't really love this record. Like it's okay and I appreciate mm-hmm. what it is. In fact, a few, as you can see here, these have all been listened to. I found it on YouTube. I don't know, a year or two ago. I'm like, I forgot about this record.
Yeah.
I should listen to it again. And I had the same experience. Like, so like some of it's kind of cool and mm-hmm. he's mm-hmm. great. He's Alex, you know. And I appreciated this and that about it. So.
Yes.
I wrote off Getty's record because of that. I was just like, you know what I mean? He's really nothing without Rush. Getty is going to be nothing without Alex and mm-hmm. Neil. So like, I'm not even going to listen to it. Like, right. I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? So I just never got it. Or I put off listening to it. I was like, I was just assuming it was going to be like this. And so I have to. You're going to laugh a little bit. Okay. But when you sent me the text and said, like, how about we talk about Getty and Alex and Solomon? I'm surprised you didn't hear my eyes rolling from all the way over here, because I was just like, oh my God. Because that Victor record is like, when we talked about Alex's life, I think we may have touched on
it.
I don't know. But I just was like, you know, and I just was like not in the mood to listen to two records that I assumed were both going to be very meh.
Uh-huh.
So today I was like, Lou, you know, we're doing a podcast. You got to listen to Getty's album.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to listen to Getty's album.
Mm-hmm.
And I put on Getty's album, and I was like, the first song, like, this is really fucking good. Mm-hmm. And then I listened to the second song, I'm like, this is really fucking good.
Yeah.
And then I listened to the third song, I'm like, this is really fucking good. I love that record. I think it's really good. It's got a record that I'm going to go back, and I'm going to be, it's going to, in fact, I hit some likes, so some of it would show up in my regular
rotation,
yeah. You know? I thought, I didn't hear anything on the record that was weak. There's songs I liked better than
more
others,
yeah.
But
yeah.
For the there's nothing. Every song is very tuneful. I'm really impressed with his lyrics. It made the record made me rethink Rush in a lot of different ways. I love the fact that it's bass heavy, of course, but that doesn't detract from like his sense of melody. Like most of the songs on there, we could sit down with an acoustic guitar and a good singer,
yeah.
And you could just play those songs, and they would get over. There's nothing really like that on Alex's record. Most of Alex's stuff, you got to have the arrangement and the sound and everything to really make it come across. But Getty is like, he's a real fucking songwriter. I was like, damn, boy. And I was thinking, it made me think all kind of stuff. Like, he should be writing songs that maybe even other artists are recording. Right. Maybe he should write with Dave Grohl.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, you know, like he's just, I mean, I was really, and I thought the lyrics were really good. He has definitely a whole, looks at the world in a different way than Neil does. He doesn't bring that same kind of thing to it at all. He's doing his own thing.
Right.
And then it made me think that, like, I wonder if, like, because Neil's lyrics kind of became such a part of the identity of Rush, that, like, Getty, and not in any kind of resentful way, just kind of took a back seat to lyric writing. It was kind of content Neil write the lyrics.
Yeah.
Sure, fine. He's great. Like, why would I? You always get that impression.
It ain't
those
broken.
Guys,
don't
like,
fix it.
Yeah, like the three of them are like, I don't care. What do you think? Yeah, it's fine. You like that? Sure. Yeah, okay, we'll do that. Right. Like, they all seem like uber Canadians.
Oi. Sure.
So I was floored by Getty's record. I was just really, really blown away by it. I did not expect that. I expected a kind of like noodling around on the bass.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's
a couple of
songs
that maybe like had all bass. Maybe he was going to cover Big Bottom by Spinal Tap. I don't know. I know he wasn't going to do that. But no,
maybe.
So
now, unlike you,
I was blown away.
I got that album as soon as it came out.
Yeah, because you're
I'm a big, you like big Getty Lee fan. Yeah, so. And I was very happy with it when I first got it, too.
I was super impressed. If you have not heard his album, we're going to play a little bit of it.
Yeah.
We're going to play a little bit of This Is Promise on Alex's record. Let's get more towards the beginning.
Yeah. Here's an Alex Lifeson sound.
Like, this is a riff that could be on
a Rush song. Yeah. Exactly.
Distant early warning or one of those
exactly.
kind of things,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I always like this change.
Mm-hmm.
Break the mold, break your back, break the promise you made.
That's very redundant. Yeah. That's the kind of thing Rush would put in. Like, they right out of the gate, like, he's like, let's do a little Rush.
Take the world now, don't look back, make your promise today. Leave the safety, leave this life, leave before it's too late.
Okay, cool. The next track is called Promise. Oh, it starts today. Sorry,
silly rabbit.
The previous song.
You silly rabbit.
Okay, this is Four Sticks by Led Zeppelin.
Okay. Yeah.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
Four Sticks is dun, 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 dun. This is dud. This has like a pickup
beat. Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun type thing going
sure.
on.
Sure.
And he is a huge Jimmy Page fan.
Sure.
So it's like, yep. you know, you can tell.
Little
you know,
nod.
Finally, I'm going to get to do a Led Zeppelin thing.
I need you to hold me tightly in your arms. I need you to show me if I might be wrong. I am pink and you are blue. Can I trust my whole life to you? Just don't take me for some fool.
This is one that I liked on the record, too. Yeah. Come out pretty strong in the first couple tracks. Mr. X. Okay, so this is where he's like, okay, we're going to do an instrumental thing. And this is like something that could have been like in an Eddie Murphy movie, you know, in the 80s.
Mm, okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Stretch it out like caramello. Reminds me a little bit of did you ever hear their album that Jeff Beck released around this time called Beck's Guitar Shop?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it's in that vein. So, like, you know, again, we're like, maybe he's paying a little homage to one of his heroes. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
At the end. So, you know, like a lot of this stuff is okay. It mm-hmm. didn't really turn my crank. I'm like, play Working Man. I'm one of them. I'm that guy.
You are that guy.
And all its fears. The lonely cry of a soul.
All right. And okay. So there's a spoken word thing. Like, sure. It is what it is. Sure. I'm not like yes. knocking it. I'm just, that is what it is. Yes. And that there's people that probably love that. Just not done.
Not
for,
me.
Yeah. Doesn't do my thing. Doesn't do it for me.
Sure.
Send out a warning. Very Alex Lifeson riff. Also yeah. reminds me a little wee bit of something that, what was his name? From Yes, Trevor Rabin.
Yes, yeah.
You know, the second Yes mm-hmm. kind of reminds me of something he might do. There's a Jeff Beck thing going on, too.
Yeah.
This is Edwin singing. Let me give you a little bit of a thing on Edwin here.
You're right.
There he is. Come on, computer. Edwin is a Canadian alternative rock singer from Toronto. He is the lead vocalist for the Canadian rock band I'm Mother Earth, as well as a solo artist. He is also the lead singer for the Canadian supergroup Crash Karma. In 2016, he reunited with I, Mother Earth.
Interesting.
Fascinating. Peruse.
Okay, let's see what else is out there. Our next competitor.
Sending out a warning.
This is fun.
No, shut up. I'm sorry, these are... The thing is delayed when I click the button. it starts playing the song, but it takes a second to change,
the name.
So I apologize. Yeah, I this is probably crazy. My favorite track on the album.
Because it's out.
Really shows his sense of humor.
A fun little concept too, you know.
There's these little breaks with his wife and another woman.
Yeah, it's only good for one thing. Shut up and play guitar.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Strip and go naked. A little acoustic. Is another instrumental. You got to remember, Alex is not like Getty is like an amazing vocalist.
You know, yeah, yeah.
And Alex doesn't do that. So
he's a good backup vocalist, but
I don't know if he's a good backup vocalist or not.
He's so good you don't even notice sometimes. Yeah, if you watch
he's
the
way
live
in the
concerts,
back. Hey, way in the back,
he's so low.
The Big Dance.
Yeah, this is where I'm like.
This is one of these sort of with a lot of keyboard synthesizer programming, and
which is really funny.
There's a part in Beyond the Light of Cage where he's like, "Why am I competing with synthesizers or something?" Right?
Yeah, that's why. Like, as I'm listening to this album today, I'm like, there sure are an awful lot of keys and synth in this for somebody who didn't like it.
Oh, hold on.
Yes?
Hold on, this is important.
Okay.
Oh, wrong album. This is the one that features
Les
Claypool.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't recognize the bass part. So that elevates it for sure.
Okay.
Big Dance. Okay. This is the title track, which is... Okay, the title track is a poem by W.H. Auden.
I did not know that.
A British-American poet. Auden's poetry is noted for its stylistic and technical achievement, its engagement with politics, morals, love, and religion, and its variety in tone, form, and content. So basically he reads this poem and sort of does a kind of riff on the poem. And again, like, cool, you know, man, cool, dude. It's your solo album, and he's fucking
that's your solo.
Alex Lifeson.
Do what you want. I'm just saying, if you like it.
And I am the spirit.
So am I.
And this closes out the album. Edwin again provides some vocals on it. Very Rush riff.
Yeah, exactly.
So, here's my thought at the time when I listened to this record. I was like, I respected the fact that he didn't want to put out something and sound like the past.
Exactly.
So I think that him using Edwin on vocals in these different places really gives it much more of what was happening in rock in the mid 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, this sounds like a 90s album.
Yeah, it has that kind of 90s kind of thing going on with the approach to the songwriting, the approach to the melody, more rough. I think he was like, you know, I think at this time he was probably, what, in his 40s? And he's probably mm-hmm. like, I don't want to be some old guy in his 40s. Like, I right, want right. to, like, put out something that, like, has at least some, you know, shows that, yes, I am paying attention to current music. I know what music sounds like now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Because, right. it's like I said, it's a you can tell it's a 90s album.
So, cool shit. Cool shit. Right. It, you know, I mean, like, anything that these guys do... You know, I mean, we're Rush nerds. We're going to like.
Yes.
But there's gonna you're going to like it. We can't say too much stuff about it. I'm not going to sit here and, like, bash the album. It's just, you know. However, I'm going to jump over here. We're going to take a little quick...
Let's take a listen to...
To a peruse through Getty's album.
Yes.
My Favorite Headache, which I love the fucking title of already.
Yep.
Okay. And the title track is opens the album. See if this will play.
What is that bass?
You would never get that this is Geddy Lee, right, from Rush, right? Here, let's start it again. Fucking sick.
Yeah. That opens the album.
Also, what's on this record, and you hear a little bit there, but there's more as you progress through the record, background vocals and harmonies, mm-hmm, which is something mm-hmm. that Rush is not famous for. This really gave me all kind of thoughts about what him and Alex might do next.
Yeah.
This is the second track. It's called The Present Tense. Present tense. When you lose the past, the future makes no sense.
What?
Like, yeah, dude. Like he's a good lyricist.
He knows how to write lyrics.
Great, like background mm-hmm. kind of vocal mm-hmm. thing he did. When you hear a Rush song, you know, because I think that'd be too like. Well, we gotta play it live. Like,
yeah, how are we gonna?
I mean,
this
they're
off?
already sequencing a lot of that shit. You know, for all the shit that these young bands got for like using computers and stuff like that, I was like, the whole time I was kind of doing this.
Yeah, because
I like a Rush. You know,
our band.
You know, they do that. Yeah. I mean, they've been doing it for many years.
Yeah, and they have to.
Secure and confident, imbued with innocence, ready.
He's kind of showing a little bit of his mm-hmm. mellow side here, but this, I don't believe this stays mellow.
Living in a different kind of world. You're living in the present tense.
Cool shit.
Yeah, very cool.
Window to the World.
Yeah.
got our video blocked by Facebook.
I'm still watching it. So, you know.
Working it perfect with a K.
See what he did there?
The problem is the K should be turned around backwards like corn. This is not the Soul Asylum song.
No.
The guitar sounds are really different, too. Like,
exactly.
This reminds me much more of Counterparts era Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's more kind of organic.
Right.
Kind of sounds. There's like, and, you know, Getty is a piano player, which becomes more apparent later on in the record.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't really synth-laden.
Right.
Which is hilarious,
exactly.
Right?
Because considering Alex Lifeson's.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Yeah. That's because his kid was in it.
I know.
Let's roll forward.
Yes, sure.
Peruse through the record a little bit more. Angel.
Oh, the Angel Share. Sure.
The Angel Share, secrets of the universe.
I mean, it's nice. Mm-hmm. Really pretty.
It's seldom fair.
Well, I had to laugh when I saw this title. Because do you know what the Angel Share is?
Speak to me, sweet pea.
The Angel Share is when they make bourbon and they put it in the great big barrels. Over time, part of it evaporates.
That's the Angel Share.
And that's the Angel Share. Now, I'm going to admit to something. I work as a cook. And sometimes,
you're cooking tonight, Mr. Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. And sometimes when I make something, you know, like mozz sticks or something like that, there's an Angel Share involved, and they get their order. But there's
and one, the angel gets his share.
One left. And I joke about it.
Are
I'm
you
like,
one of those?
This is the angel
like
share.
The waitresses that like eat a couple French fries off your plate before they give it to you. You know that that's happening.
No.
Like,
you get
if
your
you think,
full
if
portion.
If you think that that doesn't happen
more.
In restaurants, like just be grateful that's all that's happening.
I just make more than the order requires.
Watch the movie Waiting.
Oh yes. Yes.
Always be nice to your servers.
But yeah, exactly.
Always.
But I've
always,
never done
always.
Anything. I've never done anything for.
This is called Moving to Bohemia.
Oh, thank you.
I wonder if it's a rhapsody.
Ah!
When the air is not clean, when the water is cold.
Said that there's tracks on here where he used there's multiple basses being played
really?
At the same time.
Okay.
And I thought there like it sounded like there might have been like
yeah.
It was alternating between a kind of his Rick type sound
uh-huh,
and then his
uh-huh.
Fender type
yeah.
sound. I mean maybe I'm just hearing things, but oh goodness.
Next up, Home on the Strange.
This is one of my favorite ones. I think it says a great groove. Let's start this again.
Yep.
He sleeps in the good.
Yeah, what?
On the Strange. This is one of my favorite ones on the record. Yeah.
Next up.
Now check this out. He's tickling the old ivories.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Very touching ballad. There's some quiet moments on the record as well. This is called Still. No, it is not the
Still
Commodore song. When I hear this, I hear somebody who's like a real songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody can sit down at a piano or with a guitar and like, let me play you a song I wrote.
Exactly.
You know, kind of thing. Like, and I did not expect that from Geddy Lee. So this is the last song we're going to play. And this was the only other song that got radio airplay. The songs on the album that got some radio airplay was the title track, My Favorite Headache. And I never heard it, but I could imagine DVE playing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could definitely. And Grace to Grace, which is the last track as well. So we're going to listen to a little bit of this.
100,000 years, 100,000 miles of track. 100,000 tears, 100,000 souls you can't give back. When the dark subsides and eternity goes by.
Cool. It's great to hear him just play some rock and roll.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyways, guys, there you are, the
two
solo albums by Geddy and Alex from Rush.
Yes. And Ludini and I both kind of agree. We like the Geddy one a little bit better.
Steve says he's enjoying a Jack and Coke just like Lemmy.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, boy.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, buddy. I'm glad we got the comments working. Couple folks, it's like nice to have, you know, just have some folks hanging out with you. I think now that we know what we're doing.
Yeah, we should be okay.
Hopefully, moving forward, we'll be able to build up the live aspect of this. I've been saying it and I'm not lying. I want to take this out to clubs and do this in front of an actual audience.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? Woo! Thank you, little young lady. Give me a beer.
So,
that'd be nice.
So, tell me about. What did you? So, guys, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. That's our Rush presentation for the evening. We're gonna kind of like do our regular podcast type stuff for a little while here, and then wrap up.
Yep.
We have some new music that we're gonna feature here in a couple of minutes. Mr. Pittsburgh.
Hi.
Did you get into anything this week? Up to anything?
No. You know, you've got the new movies kind of covered. You talk about newer movies, but I have a really extensive DVD and Blu-ray collection. So, I went back this week and revisited Super 8. Remember Super 8?
Cage.
J.J. Abrams. It was the kids that were making the Super 8 movie.
I love that movie. I have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's very cool. So I went back.
That's J.J. Abrams wants to be Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, and I just literally rolled my eyes the first lens flare. I'm like, I forgot.
He's all about that lens flare.
I was kind of interested.
About that flare.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you've seen it. You know, maybe
I've seen it a few times.
But I was kind of underwhelmed with the CGI stuff. Like a lot of the stuff looked fake, and I'm like, I wonder if he did that on purpose because we're looking back to Super 8, where You didn't have all those editing tools.
Hold on a minute here.
Yes?
Let me take a look. What year was that?
Let me roll up onto the sidewalk and take a look. Movie. I don't know. I forget what movie.
I want to find out when that was made. That was what? 2010s?
Yeah.
Something like that. Let's pull that up because I really like that movie. 2011.
Yeah, I did too. That's one of those ones where I'm like, what do I watch today? Oh, you know what? Super 8.
Yeah, Elle Fanning.
Yeah, that's another thing.
She was
thing.
Just a kid in it. Like, it
and I
great.
Thought she was a much better actress than her sister at that point. I'm like, wow, she's really good.
See, the thing, the more you know.
The more you know, everybody.
The more you know.
2011. It was made. Yeah, the CGI, I thought, for 2011 could have been a little better, but then again...
This is crack.
Oh, Lord.
Bitch, this shit will fuck you up. It isn't glamorous or cool. Just kidding, you bitch. It's glamorous and cool. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. But it can also make you way more interesting at parties.
True, yeah.
So every time you use it, bitch, you better strap in, because you're about to get fucked up. Everybody wants to be cool, and smoking crack will make you cool.
What's crack, bitch?
Please, please, please.
Brought to you by the late, great Pee Wee Herman.
Please do not... Oh, yeah, I remember
that. That's what that was.
Please do not send me any videos from that TikToker, because I don't want that to be introduced into my algorithm.
Oh, dude, you can't dumb stuff. I love dumb stuff.
Oh, my God. I like dumb stuff, too, but I'm like, oh, my God. You know what I like? I like Aunt Vagina's syrup. I know you like the flap.
Mama's flapjack juice is thick and rich.
But I like Aunt Vagina's.
Aunt Vagina? Aunt Vagina. Wow, Aunt Vagina.
Hey, Luke, can I ask you a serious question? Do you know the difference between wallpaper and toilet paper?
Yes, I know the difference. I know. No, what is it? Ooh, gross. I've only seen that video 20 times. You can tell Mr. Pittsburgh and I see watch the same.
We watch way too many. Same algorithms are like, you know what, you guys just
I was
live
waiting.
Next door
I'm
to
like,
each other.
I bet I know Mr. Pittsburgh's going to throw that at me. I got to throw.
I got to be
real. Ooh, gross. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Lordy. That anyway. But yes, I saw Super 8. Again, just totally enjoyed it. And I'll probably watch it again in a couple of months. Because I'm like that. I'm like, if
there's
I have a movie,
certain movies
like,
that are like comfort food.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of them.
And Lily's not here, right? Okay. For me, it's any of the Star Trek movies.
Sure.
Like, I could just kind of put them on and just kind of like, I don't have to, you know, I can just relax into them.
Exactly.
You know.
We need
I think that what needs, so you got anything else?
No, that's I watched that.
I think that what would be super cool. Not like Super 8, but I think it would be super.
Oh,
what I think would be make the world a better place.
Yes,
would be if there were no for the 5 years.
Okay,
no Marvel, no Star Wars, yeah. No Star Trek. Okay, take them all.
Okay,
off the, but let Disney kind of tease us a little bit with things
right.
They might be doing
right.
Or whatever.
Yes.
You know, but take 5 years and develop some directors. Who make, like Gareth Edwards, he's a good example of a guy that like started out making kind of personal kind of films, started making kind of indie films, and he knows how to tell a fucking story. And develop some of these young, and they can be women, I'm not, you know, but like let them make some like smaller mm-hmm. movies and everything, and then in about 2025, or about 2029, come out with a bang with some Marvel film that's going to rock everybody's socks by one of these directors that's like pumped out a few of these like, you know, critically acclaimed, loved,
right.
you know, stories,
yeah.
Knows how to tell a great story, and like, and then do that with Star Wars, do that with Marvel, do it with Star Trek, and I think that when we'd all be ready, we'd be by 5 years, we'd all be kind of like, oh, it'd be great. And like at that point, a Star Wars film would be like, oh, cool, a Star Wars
yeah.
film. Not like, exactly. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Not another
Star.
One.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? And tell a great fucking story. It's not rocket science. The
yes.
problem is we got too many
yes.
people in who don't really understand or really are passionate about films trying to make films. And that's Bob Iger doesn't even come from the film world. Like he doesn't know anything that's not his passion. He's a business guy, but it's good. I get that you got to make money, but they're not making any money. How's that working for you?
No.
You know, our friend Ben Jordan. I've talked about Ben Jordan on the podcast before. You should follow Ben's YouTube channel. He's a very talented guy. He's a very interesting YouTube channel. He's a musician. He does some very also other mini documentaries about, he did a whole thing about self-driving cars and how he was using a self-driver because he was traveling across the country because he was filming something or he was mm-hmm. doing a bunch of gigs or something and he needed a car.
That way the car could drive itself
to help
while
him
he did
because
his
he was
thing.
Working so hard. Oh, he Lord. Needed something that would like help him out with driving, you know. But anyways, he's a really interesting guy. But he had, and this is what happens, I'm leading into this. This is what happens when you take music, movies, art, stuff like that out of the hands of artists and give it to big tech. Because Ben is one of these guys that's like actually profiting, making some money on streams with his music.
Right.
He's got something like 13 albums and they've been out for like 20 years. So he's like got like a thing going. He's on all these like some big playlists and things like that. All of a sudden, all his stuff disappeared off of streaming.
Oh.
So it wasn't for a long period of time, but it was for a long enough period of time that like the big playlists that he was on mm-hmm. said, well, your songs, like, they don't work, so we can't have songs that don't work. Like, that's, right. you know, it's going to make us look, but we got to substitute with something else. So he got pulled from some really big playlists. And, you know, the short period of time that he was lost this, there's a dollar figure associated with it. It's not small. Yes, and then yes. the time it's going to take for him to, like, get reestablished on all these different mm-hmm. things is going to mm-hmm. take a lot of time. And it turns out it was some glitch with one of these middleman DistroKid or CD Baby or one of these middleman companies that gets your music. You can't just put your music on Spotify. You have to go through one of these middleman companies that charges you like either a annual fee or monthly fee or something, or they charge you a percentage or something. And they put it up there. And if they suspect fake streams,
right,
and I'm not going to get into the whole video and what a fake stream is. The video is about 20 minutes long. He explains all that stuff like that, but they have certain algorithms and stuff that calculate, well, this might be a fake stream. Well, mm-hmm. then you get dinged mm-hmm. and they pull you.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And the problem is Spotify, DistroKid, none of these are music industry platforms. These are all tech platforms. Mm-hmm. They don't understand music.
No.
At all. Nerds. Okay, so that there used to be RCA.
Yeah.
They were a record label. And they also made the radios and the record players.
Exactly.
And everything. It's like they were all plugged in. They knew what was going on. Like, you know what I mean? They knew what music people wanted to hear and how to la 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 la. Okay, now that's going on. The other issue is this. And I asked this, and I was not being a shit. I promise I was not being a shit. But I said, did you ever consider selling your music directly to your fans? Like, instead of doing all this stuff with these third parties that like...
Right.
Like, this is a good example. Like, if you put all your effort into your Spotify, your CD Baby, or whatever you're doing, and for some reason, you know, not just... any time now, we see what's going on with big tech. Like, they can just take an attitude and decide we don't like you, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
that didn't even what happened. This was a kind of like a glitch in the matrix kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So something like that happens, and you're fucked. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were just selling directly to fans, there is no getting fucked.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you have a direct
line. You got what
line.
You want. Your fans they, got what
they
want.
They're going back. Yeah. And you just, you know what I mean? You just, you know what I mean? I get it. There are people that feel like, you know, this is, you know, that they want to be part of that world. But I don't think, I've always been like, this is one of the reasons, like, I started with Patreon and then I kind of backed off on it mm-hmm. because this is one of these middleman kind of
right.
things.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, what happens if I build up, you know, a couple thousand fans on there, you know, and I got people maybe paying me every month? Hey, I'm going like, hey, man, I'm making all right. I can, you know, reinvest. And then,
sure,
like,
sure.
something happens.
You know what?
And they decide, like, we're not going to have any more bald guys with beards. You know
Sorry.
What I mean?
It's a new law.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's completely
Sorry
arbitrary.
That.
What can fucking happen?
Yeah.
So I've always been like on that, but he really relies on that. It's an interesting video. You should check it out. But I think it's a cautionary tale for musicians out there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, just a kind of an interest story for those of you that are music people, especially those of you that are beating the drum against Spotify and places like that. Yeah, I've said many times, Spotify is not for musicians. Spotify is for fans that want to feel good about streaming music. Exactly. They don't want to, like, you know what I mean? They don't want to go to the torrent sites and stuff like that. They want to find a way to kind of, so they pay a little bit of money and they feel better.
Yeah.
Because now, you know what I mean? Mm. You're getting a half of a penny per stream, you know what I mean? At least they're doing, I did my part. It's a typical, like, it's a yuppie thing. Remember, yuppies aren't a thing anymore, but that's how yuppies were. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I gave at the grocery store, you know, $3 on my order, and like, I don't got to think about anybody having any problems.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you should worry about people having problems.
It's don't just a worry.
Thing. Let's move on. Mr. Pittsburgh, would you ever buy,
yes.
You say you had the money.
Okay, I have the money. Okay, very good.
Would you buy a $40,000 guitar? Like the Adam, I think it's the, what's his name? Adam Jones. Is that the guitar player for Tool?
Oh, yeah, the Les Paul?
Yeah, and it's something like what, $20,000?
It's a Silver Burst.
It's like $20,000 or something like
that. Yeah, I bought an Epiphone Silver Burst for $280. So, no.
So okay. So you saved so like $18,000.
Yeah, right?
$17,000.
So here's the thing. Hey, Lou. Yins know me, right?
I do. Yins do know you.
Yins know I've had quite a few guitars over years, huh? Yins know I've
had
paid.
A couple. We have one or two.
Yins know I've paid $3,500 for a guitar at one point. Yeah,
that's but not $35,000.
No, but not $35,000. So,
a needle pulling thread.
Back. I just want to give some you know, backstory to this.
Are you one of the backstory boys?
Yes. How did you find out?
I know.
Is it? But anyway, so like in the past, I have spent a lot of money on guitars. Okay, but would I buy a $40,000 guitar even if I had the money? No, and that's because in the last couple of years I've had to scale back and I've gotten less expensive guitars. And guess what? I enjoy them probably more than the 58 reissues I used to get because I was afraid of nicking them or, you know, banging them or something. I thought banging them. And
I don't know what you're doing with your guitars.
Nothing. You can't watch them unless you're on my Only's fan. I love guitars. Hi, y'all.
Anyway. Hey, Ms. J is visiting.
She's with us, yes.
The lovely and talented Ms. J.
Yes, indeed. But no, if I had the money, I would not spend $40,000. Did you see that the, I don't know if you're talking about a particular guitar, but I saw recently that Gibson is releasing the Jimmy Page EDS 1275 for $50,000. Folks, that's his double neck guitar, the Gibson double neck. No. Not unless Jimmy Page came with it and he played for me for every day for a year. No.
So
Yes,
man. If you
yes,
should,
Lou,
you should follow because you're a guitar nerd.
Yeah,
you should follow Philip Knight.
Oh yeah,
Philip McKnight.
I don't know if I follow him on you TikTok. Follow I him on, do follow no, him on YouTube.
On YouTube, yeah.
Okay,
and so he had a talk about this.
Uh huh.
And I think, you know, Phil's approach is very. Oh, he's like Mr. Common Sense. And he has a lot of knowledge. He owned a very successful music store for many years and knows the kind of people that buy guitars. And stuff like that.
Sure.
But he's like, when you get into that price range and like, because he was talking about, he was doing his podcast and people were chiming in and saying, I guess maybe they're talking about the Adam Jones, which is some kind of crazy price.
Yeah.
You're like, that's stupid. Blah, blah, blah. But what he was saying is like, you don't understand. It's like, that isn't for you. Those guitars are collectors.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's what those people do. They wheel and deal in that world.
Brilliant, yes.
And that's what they do. That's not, you know what I mean? So the guy that wants to play, he was talking about how he bought a gem,
mm-hmm.
777,
sure.
And that, you know, he's afraid to play it.
Exactly.
Because like it has kind of appreciated, and because he doesn't have any, so he's got it hanging in a case, and he's like, oh, I had to buy like a different Ibanez.
Yeah.
To actually play, because I don't want to fuck this up. And it hasn't even, it's appreciated a little bit. It's gone from like $5,000 to $7,000. You can probably get it for about $7,000 because it's totally clean. But like some of these guitars are, and he told a story about a guy that bought a guitar and he the guy said, why don't you go ahead and like feature this? I'll loan it to you. Feature it on your channel.
Sure.
And it was some like $15,000 or something. Uh-huh. I can't remember what it was. And the guy, no, it was like a $10,000 guitar. And so he featured it and showed the specs, you know what I mean? And he thanked the guy. And he says, this guy got so much shit after that video from like his friends and other people in the community that the guy felt embarrassed.
Oh.
And he sold the guitar.
At a loss.
And he made like, no, he didn't sell it at a loss.
Oh, he did make some money? Okay,
he made like $2,000 on it. However, three or 4 years later, the person he sold it to turned around and sold it for like an additional $20,000.
Wow. Hi, Josh. Josh is watching.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
That's a whole scene. And so guys like me and Mr. Pittsburgh, who just want to play guitar.
That's all we want
to do. You know what I mean? Like, that is in our scene. We're not really trying to. That's Vic Dupre. That's Vic Dupre world. That's what type of shit.
Bow your head when you say that man's name. We love Vic.
So I found that really interesting. There is a Total Guitar put out the poll of the greatest blues guitars
of
all time.
Let me tell you one more story about the $40,000 guitar.
We can talk about something else. I don't care.
Yeah, that's fine. Years ago, when I was buying the $3,500 58 reissues.
I wish they were $3,500.
I wish. Okay, thank you.
That R9 thank is like you. $8,000.
Thank you, yes.
R4, yes. The R4
but you
and
had
R9,
to wait.
They're
you
like,
had to wait because they're okay. So I get onto our favorite guitar store. Hi, Josh. I told him that. But he, I went down to the local guitar shop. You know what you want to talk about. And the proprietor says, you got to look at this. And he pulls out a Gary Rossington reissue. And this is aged by Murphy. It's got the cigarette burns, everything.
Murphy.
Look, as a guitar nerd, I need you to take me seriously.
Okay, all right, I'm sorry. Reference.
For the next couple seconds here. That Gary Rossington Les Paul, to date, is the best guitar I've ever played. It felt so good. The person wanted, the store owner wanted $4,000 for it. Now, yes, I know I was...
In 2000 I, and...
Oh, man.
Three,
what is this?
Four,
little five. After my divorce. It's probably like 2005, 2006. And I'm like, you know, and at this point I was like, I need to get my spending under control. And I could have bought it that day. And I said, no. Have you seen the within a year or two, those guitars, because they're only
$8,000,
$9,000.
Now they're probably
$20,000
guitar. Yeah.
Oh, they're fudge puckers.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to be able to sit on those guitars for a while. And I've got gas, and I just need to buy, sell, trade.
There's a guy that I know. You know him too. I don't want to say his name because I don't want to get
Bill Timkoe.
No,
it's a name from the past. It's not Bill.
But
Timko,
he came into like he didn't come into like money. He came into
big money.
Like I don't want to
all
wanna
y'all
tell too
money.
Much of a story, but he came into mega bucks.
Yeah,
like he doesn't have to like worry about money ever, and he can buy whatever he wants.
God bless
and
him.
But he doesn't
he
like to talk
that money?
Too much about it because his wife doesn't really know how much. Yeah,
so I've been married.
Dude, he's buying everything. He's
good
got
for
like,
him.
He's got 62 Strats, 58 Strats. Like,
I know
like
who you're
Strats,
talking
he likes
about.
Les Pauls. You know what I'm talking
but
about.
But yeah,
you know
and God
about?
Bless
he's
him.
He's got fucking
That's
everything.
Fantastic.
Every time you get down there, man, he's like, and he's super humble.
He's really cool.
Yeah, he's very laid back, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, good
but
for you, dude.
Awesome.
Like, he's living the fucking like guitar
Hell
nerd dream.
Yes, good for him. All right,
$40,000. Real quick.
Yes?
Maybe we'll talk about this another time. Anyways, Total Guitar put out the poll of the greatest blues guitarists of all time.
Okay.
And Chris Buck did a video on it, and somehow he ranked higher than like people like B.B. King and stuff like that.
What?
He's like, and he's embarrassed, you know what
yeah.
I mean? He's like, I don't have anything to do
like,
with
no.
this. You know what
I
mean?
I didn't
these
pay
things,
anybody
these
off.
Polls are just silly. We can maybe get into that another time. I want to talk about a couple of movie things.
Okay,
first
cool.
of all, I want to tell you guys... I heard about this really cool thing. I've not been able to watch it yet, but I'm going to watch it. It's called Primevals.
Tell me more,
tell
sir.
Me more.
I would like to know more about these
would you like to know more?
Primevals.
The Prime evils.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's. Ooh. I want to kind of like give Mr. Pittsburgh, because I think you're going
to
find
Please
this.
Tell me.
I think
I need
that
to
as a
know
as a
now.
Fellow nerd,
yeah,
you're going to find this interesting.
I find it fascinating.
I think I find it fascinating. But Juliet Mills, remember Juliet Mills?
I think so.
She was in a million things as we were kids.
Oh, younger, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, oh yeah, yes. You know, yeah, we just pulled up her IMDb. Okay. Yes, I remember.
Yeah, Juliet Mills. She's in it. And so it's called The Primevals. This movie started being made in 1978.
What?
And they finished it like in 2022, 2023.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
And it is.
Was that on purpose, though? Look. I'm sorry. I'm jumping. I want to know more, Ludini. Please tell me more.
So it was very complicated movie to make because it features something that like all a lost art. It features a lot of stop motion animation.
Okay. Oh.
And it is very much in the vein of The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
Yes, yes.
Or Jason and the Argonauts.
Sure.
Clash of the Titans. It's very much in that type of vein.
Okay.
The rest of it, the whole stuff is kind of cheesy, like those movies kind of were.
Okay.
But it took them a long time to finish the stop motion.
Huh.
And it looks wildly fascinating. It is not meant... It is considered to be a kind of... It's not supposed to be super serious. Or like,
okay.
And all the reviews I've read is like, be prepared for a kind of B-movie kind of experience with awesome stop-motion animation.
Right.
But the premise is that Sherpas attack are attacked by a Yeti.
Oh.
And they kill it, and it gets dragged back to a museum.
Mm-hmm.
And then Juliet Mills' character and a bunch of other people are like, we have to go out and find out where this came from and everything.
Okay.
And they end up getting taken to like a sort of underground, like a subterranean realm.
Sure.
Where there are all kind of stop motion creatures that they encounter and stuff like that. And it sounds like a fucking wildly fun, goofy time for people that me and Generation Xers that grew up watching The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
And it's horrible, but it's that's
everybody's
new.
What I've heard,
we were amazed to see it.
I've seen clips, and the stop motion looks really good.
Yeah,
it looks very. It looks like looks a lot of fun.
Wow, interesting.
I want to give you guys a I want one that I watched this week. That was a total. I did not see Primevals. I just wanted to give you guys.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. I have to look for it.
Matthew Vaughn produced this with Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, a bunch of other people. Samuel Jackson is in this as well. It's called Argyle.
Okay.
And Dua Lipa is in it. John Cena has a
John Cena.
Yeah. John Cena. it has a small role in it as well. Now.
Mm. Jeez, look at everybody.
Here's the problem.
Yeah?
It's not good.
Oh, no.
It's not. Like, I saw the trailer and I'm like, this looks like a lot of fun. You know what I mean? And, okay, there's going to be a little bit of a spoiler. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It has a tie-in to The Kingsman.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Which the first movie was great.
Sure.
They fell down on the other one. The one that was kind of a prequel to the Kingsman was that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Cavill is kind of wasted in the film.
Okay.
No, he's not like wasted.
Not like us.
Not wasted like we are right now.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. It should have been a lot better. Here's another thing that happened.
Yes.
You get about an hour and 30 minutes into it, and it feels like the movie is ending.
Okay.
Like you're kind of wrapping it up. And then you look down and you go like, oh, there's another 45 minutes. And that last 45 minutes is a slog.
Oh, no.
It's very cringy.
Oh.
And like, you know, but really the villain is actually from outer space.
Oh.
No. Ha, you thought he's from outer space. No, he's not. He's actually from the Pentagon, you know, it's like all these twists that are just like keep throwing
it.
No, they weren't dead. They were alive. You know, it's like
it's a dream.
Yeah. Like, well, it doesn't. Thank God, it doesn't do that. Remember a whole season of Dallas? There was
I remember the entire series of St. Elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
It was all a dream.
It was all a dream.
Well, how about the whole series? How about the whole series of Newhart? Turned out to be a dream.
That was great.
I had this dream. I was working in this. Yeah. Anyways, sorry. We're digressing badly, but it's just like it was just such, the reason I'm talking about because I was like so bummed out because it has this great cast. Sam Rockwell. He brings
his
A game to everything he does. He's fucking great in it, and he has the best lines and the best jokes and everything. They try to at some point. So what I thought was happening in the movie was this was a Romancing the Stone.
Okay.
She writes about these things but doesn't actually do them.
Right.
Just like in Romancing the Stone. Yes. And then she actually gets to live an adventure. And uh-huh. She starts out kind of awkward, but then they end up really kind of hitting it off. And
right.
So I thought, oh, this is going to be like the modern day Romancing the Stone. It's going to be great. I love Bryce Dallas Howard. She's a fucking great actress and everything like that. Like, all cool. That's not what this is.
Oh.
No. And at some point, they get into like they make her do all kind of crazy fighting and stuff like that. That's like, look, Bryce Dallas Howard. I'm going to say something's going to be incredibly offensive and sexist. So I'm just going to say, anyways,
what's wrong with being sexy?
She is. She has the. She would be hot.
Oh boy,
body for Tuesday night. Karaoke at the Hofbra.
Oh.
She'd be like somebody like you'd be.
Well,
you know,
you are true there.
She'd be really hot for that. But she does not have.
But she's not Charlize Theron.
She's not athletic enough to do. I mean, it looked awkward.
Oh.
Everything they were making her do looked awkward.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's a bad actor. And when she was the first hour and a half of the film, I thought like it was like pretty solid what she was doing. It made sense and everything.
Sure.
But when they get into this other thing where she's got to kind of superhero it up, it becomes completely just more.
It's no bueno.
Yeah, you're just like the whole time you're like, when is this going to be over? You know, it was like it was unfortunate, dude.
That
I'm sorry. I love Bryce Dallas Howard.
So do I.
She's great, but none of these people were used the way that should have been used, you know.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like the whole time is like they're making me like jump around. What's the like Atomic Blonde?
That's why I said
like that. Like fantastic. You know, no, that's not. It just isn't what she does. And Sam Jackson, it's like, oh, I'll be in any movie. I don't know what's going on with him. It used to be like if Sam Jackson was in it, it's gonna be pretty good.
You're like, all right, but now.
So I did save the best for last.
Okay, here we go.
And this is a movie that, look.
Yeah?
This isn't going to be for everybody.
No?
I'm just going to tell you right now that this isn't for everybody.
Okay.
But.
Now I'm worried.
If you like stuff that has a kind of art house.
Uh-huh.
Kind of vibe.
Okay.
I'm going to use the term slow burn.
Okay.
I don't mean just slow. There's actually stuff that's happening, but it's like being fed to you in a kind of very slowly, suspenseful. But it's suspenseful. It's not like slow just to like go. You have to wait 20 minutes for anything to happen. I mean, shit starts happening the second this movie starts. It's called Stop Motion.
Okay.
And ironically, when I was talking about the Primeval.
I'm watching the trailer.
Exactly. Here. Stop Motion. Is about a stop motion animator.
Sure.
And I don't want to say, this movie I don't want to spoil. I think you should see. But be prepared. It is very weird. It's very gory.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires that you put some of the pieces together yourself.
Okay.
It does not hand the whole meaning. There's no giant dump at the end where they kind of tell you what to think about the film.
Right.
You are invited
you're on your
to
own here. Yeah.
You're invited to just sort of take it all in. I don't think you're going to be bored. It is an hour and a half or an hour and 34 minutes or something like that. You're like in and out, you know, which it's great. But it's got this like just kind of building and building of like what in the holy fuck is happening?
Holy fuck.
It features a lot of really amazing effects. Not this crazy Marvel over the top CG bullshit, but like stuff that like took somebody a long time to come up with, to create, to animate, to do stuff with. I mean, like the craft that went into this is just is jaw dropping.
Interesting. Fascinating, Captain.
Aisling Franciosi.
Why can't people have American names?
Come on, stop. Tom York is in it, but not
that's
that Tom
American,
York.
That's a good American
not
the, name.
Not the singer for Radiohead.
No?
No. Brigitte Roy is in it. Uh-huh. Therica Wilson-Reed is in it. Stella Gonnett is in it. Everybody is great. Everybody like brings their A game.
I want to see this.
It's a very cool movie. It's very dark. You can rent it on YouTube, I believe, or rent it on Prime Video.
Okay.
That's how I saw it. It does have a limited theater run, so if you're lucky to see it in the theater, you should go see it if you can.
Cool.
I highly recommend it. I highly recommend.
That's right. Here at Lou TV Rock.
It's called Stop Motion.
Okay.
One word. Stop motion, not two words.
Not two words. Don't get confused.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk about some new music before we get out of here today. So we talked about Rush. We played some old shit.
Yeah.
We told you guys about some movies you might want to check out. So let's talk about some new shit.
Okay. But let's stop that first.
Stop. In the name of love. So these guys actually have recorded shit.
But
I want to play a live clip from their High Fade. Follow them on YouTube. And they're on, I found them on TikTok. This is called Chameleon. Right hand on a guitar. Find them on YouTube and TikTok. They're called High Fade.
Nice.
Good stuff, man. I think it's funky as fuck. So this is Mr. Pittsburgh's pick.
Yes, yes. A lovely band called Turning Jane. We're waiting for the computer to do its magic. Come on, computer.
Come on, computer.
Come on now.
Come on, Mr.
Yes,
computer.
Yes, you can do it.
T-R-O-U-B-L-E. That's not the song. But it is called Trouble.
Someday
rock and roll, Mr. Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
That's, they do have a website.
Oh, they do. Oh, look at them.
Okay. A boot.
Did you ever notice that my new notables are usually...
attractive females?
Females.
Turning Jane is a dynamic all-girls rock band hailing from the vibrant music scene of Los Angeles. This powerhouse group has been making waves with their unique blend of raw energy, infectious melodies, and empowering lyrics.
Yeah.
Taylor Hart, Izzy, Jordy, and Martin, Marin are all talented musicians that bring together a diverse range of influences, resulting in a sound that is both timeless and contemporary. Their music seamlessly fuses elements of classic rock, pop, and alternative, creating a sonic experience that captivates audiences and leaves them craving for more. Known for their electrifying live performances, Turning Jane has graced renowned venues across Los Angeles, captivating crowds with their high-octane energy and undeniable stage presence. It sounds to me like these guys are a local L.A. band at this point. Their dynamic chemistry and tight musicianship create an unforgettable live experience that leaves fans exhilarated and wanting more as they continue to conquer stages and win hearts. Turning Jane is poised to become a driving force in the rock music scene. Energy, undeniable talent, and unwavering determination. This all-girl band from Los Angeles is ready to leave an indelible mark on the world of music.
Wunderbar. That's good. They are nice young ladies playing the rock and roll, you know.
Cool. Good stuff, Mr. Pittsburgh.
Thank you, sir.
Good stuff. Got to hand it to you, Mr. P. Mr. P. You come up with some good ones.
Every now and again.
Some good ones.
Every now and again.
You do come. I when we finished last week.
Yes.
A bunch of new shit showed up in my my feed on on YouTube, and and this band is a band that I found. I'm just gonna play them for a second because
they're just 1 second.
Yeah, because it was like. I wanted to share this with you guys.
Yes.
But they're called Old 60.
Oh, okay.
And they're really blowing up big on TikTok.
Interesting.
But this is like, I think these guys are the second coming of the drive-by truckers.
Oh, cool.
So.
All right, then.
This guy has a really unique voice, and he's got a really, he's got a different look.
Oh, does he know?
This is
all right, we're
going to
pull up the video.
Everything flows.
Okay,
kill that.
That's
get
the
too
wrong
many
one. Yeah, there's too many things going on there. Okay. Wait. That's not part of the video.
Late night, wide awake, laying here alone. 1 o'clock on the dial when I call and she ain't picking up a phone. Well, a couple hours later, get a call from her saying that she'll be home in the morning. Says she's staying with some friends for the night and she's alright, but drank way too much to drive home. I should have known better.
That's
shit.
Good, dude. Isn't that good? That gives me fucking chills. This blowing up all over TikTok. There's videos of them playing that, and everybody in the audience knows the lyrics, and they're like chanting it out. Dude, these guys could, like I said, man, I think these guys could be like a really.
Well,
good
here's
band.
The thing: the video starts out and the focus is on the lead singer, and yeah, he's different looking.
Yeah,
he's kind of.
scrawny is the word.
Yeah.
He looks like the kid to be pumping your gas at the station, right? Yeah. If they still had full service stations. And then all of a sudden, this fucking happens.
Yeah. He's got a really unique voice, man. The band. It's a dark song. It's beautiful. It's very cool. They're called Old 60. Well, I'll feature them again. I'll get into get into a little more deeper next week. But I couldn't resist. Like, it came up and I was kind of kicking around. That's it, too country, you know what I mean? But cool stuff. So, guys, we had a good time tonight, man. I appreciate everybody, Josh and
Jody, our friend Jody, and
Steve
was there,
and first young lady.
Neela
popped in. So thanks, at the very beginning, appreciate all y'all coming in and hanging out with us. We're gonna get out of here. You go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com.
Yeah.
For all your Ludini needs.
Don't
forget to go to RockRageRadio.com and download the free app.
Yes.
We'll be back next week with a great new podcast of something. I had an idea, but I definitely wanted to do it with Lily. I wanted to talk about one of the things I was kicking around with, it's probably what you like now.
Sure.
Why don't we do something about Irish music?
Yeah, I thought about that for Irish Day.
Irish Day.
I've had a few drinks.
But maybe not.
How Irish of a statement is that?
I'm not Irish. I'm just drunk. We're kicking around this idea of like maybe each of us bringing three records, albums that y'all maybe have missed.
Yeah, I like that.
And I've got a couple already in mind. We're going to give you a couple of highlights from it and sort of like...
Yep.
And the other thing I was thinking of today, when we were playing Geddy Lee's album,
Thinking
about, what about a podcast about our musicians from bands that put out solo records that you might not realize are actually really good?
Yeah.
And I put Geddy's on there. You know who has a really good solo album?
Who's that?
Tony Iommi.
Really?
And it's got a bunch of great guest vocalists on it.
All right, then.
You know, it's good. Anyways, guys, something to think about, something to kick around for next week. You guys have a wonderful week. We'll catch everybody on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
See ya!
Well, now she's hot breathing on another man, scheming about...